bezel-less Android phones, aspirational augmented reality from Magic Leap, while you'll want to wait to watch Westworld in VR, and space gifts. All that and a whole lot more coming up on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1657, recorded Thursday, December 8th, 2016.
This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Tracker, a coin-sized tracking device that pairs with your smartphone and keeps you from losing your most valued possessions. Visit thetracker.com right now and enter promo code TNT to receive a free Tracker Bravo with any purchase.
And by LinkedIn Learning and lynda.com. Develop talent and keep skills current with expert-led on-demand e-learning. For your free Managing Technical Projects course and to request a demo for your organization, visit learning.linkedin.com/twit.
And by Blue Apron. Blue Apron will send you fresh, high-quality ingredients to cook delicious meals with simple step-by-step instructions right to your door. See what's on the menu this week and get your first three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/twit. Welcome to Tech News Today. This is the show where we talk about everything that you need to know to look smart at cocktail parties.
I was trying to mouth along with you to see if it was convincing that I was maybe talking with your voice.
That wasn't distracting at all.
You want to know why, though? Why I was doing that?
Why?
Because I think we are the Milli Vanilli of Tech News.
You do like to call us the Milli Vanilli of Tech News.
All the time. Like, and day in, day out, it's the only thing I say.
Mm-hmm. And I'm Milli Maroney.
And I'm Vanilli Howell. Yeah, this works. I'm liking this. Feels comfortable. Let's talk about some tech news. It's official. LinkedIn is now a Microsoft entity, a mere 2 days after receiving EU regulatory approval for Microsoft's biggest acquisition deal to date. It should be noted that LinkedIn is a sponsor in the Twit Network, including this show. Microsoft outlined some of its goals post-acquisition, including LinkedIn notifications in Windows 10 Action Center, extending LinkedIn's sponsored content across Microsoft properties, and synergies between resume building within work, within Microsoft Word, and job applications within LinkedIn. So basically, in many ways, just kind of like bringing the professional networking aspects of LinkedIn closer to what Microsoft is doing with its Office suite, just as one example.
Yeah, so that the idea that you'd be typing up your resume in Word and then it would automatically update on your LinkedIn profile, right, and help you find jobs, that sounds great. The idea of getting notified on all your Microsoft devices or in all your Microsoft accounts the way that LinkedIn notifies you, which is spammy and annoying, that doesn't sound so great.
Yeah. So Satya Nadella, Microsoft CEO, has said day one strategy is all about user growth. Microsoft's really trying to do things differently with the LinkedIn deal. It's their largest acquisition deal. It was Microsoft paid $26 billion for this deal. And they want to do it right. They've had acquisitions in the past that didn't quite go so well, you know, all things considered. Nokia being just one of those examples. And so basically Satya wants this to be different by giving LinkedIn more independence in the process, not automatically like bringing LinkedIn into the fold and then, you know, smashing it into this other thing that they already have going and removing its independence. They want it to stay kind of its own entity, but also kind of collaborating between services that Microsoft has, and including kind of sticking to, you know, what it has been doing. They're keeping Jeff Weiner as the CEO.
So does that mean we'll still have to deal with InMail?
I'm guessing InMail is not going anywhere. Just a guess.
Because I never get any good InMail. It's all just like some weird person I've never met before. Someone else who wants to connect with me. Someone who...
They might have a job for you.
Yeah, maybe. I like my job.
Yeah.
So I don't need it. So this is the biggest deal in Microsoft's history.
Yeah.
I mean, this is huge. And mergers don't always work. New York Times said that 60 to 80% of mergers and acquisitions end up doing worse for stakeholders than it does, that end up destroying rather than creating shareholder value. So this is a little scary. But yeah, I mean, I think I've never loved LinkedIn. I know that that LinkedIn Learning is a one of our sponsors of this show. But I just think that the way that LinkedIn does, you know, having to go through and click every one of the people that you want to accept, it just seems like I want Microsoft to have to use, you know, their, because I, you know, I, there's a lot of Microsoft products I love. Like I love Outlook on the mobile Outlook. And I just think they could do something to help LinkedIn with all of those problems.
Yeah, maybe as a social network. Like in many ways, LinkedIn has had a kind of a foothold on the internet because people feel like they need to use it because it's like your business social network. But some of the, it has some pitfalls in being a kind of an enjoyable user experience when it comes to kind of the social media aspects of it. Maybe Microsoft can improve that.
Mm-hmm. What I don't enjoy about LinkedIn especially is every time I want to look at someone's LinkedIn profile, they know that I've looked at it. And I don't like that. I mean, yeah. It's not like I'm trying to hide anything, but it's just always weird that like you can see who viewed your profile.
If you paid extra, you can see everyone that views your profile.
So. Well, sources at Bloomberg say Samsung's Galaxy S8 will have a bezel-less all-screen design and no home button. The phone will probably release in March or April of next year after Samsung's signature extravagant announcement at Mobile World Congress at the end of February. Bloomberg sources also say that the release could be delayed due to additional testing in order to avoid the catastrophic disaster that was the Samsung Note 7. So they say that this will be a design similar to the Pixel. I think the Pixel looks a lot like the iPhone, which will look a lot like the other Samsung Galaxy
that's a weird
phones.
Comparison to
yeah, so there. I mean, because there's a bezel on the Pixel.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, obviously here the big kind of differentiator, and I'm very curious to see if this actually ends up becoming true, is the bezel-less design. So that would be none of this white stuff up here and on the sides and all that kind of stuff, just glass on glass. We've already seen Samsung do its curve around. So if you take that all around, like that would be a pretty slick looking device. Don't ever drop it because good luck of that surviving a fall. But we saw a little bit earlier this year, actually only a couple of months ago, if that, Xiaomi has the Mi Mix, which was its bezel-less design on three of four corners of the phone. The bottom corner is where you have a bezel down there, and that's because you have a front-facing camera, so you have to have room for that. I'm curious to know, Samsung Galaxy S8, if it's truly bezel-less in all four sides, how they get around that. You know, they're saying here that there's some sort of a home button hidden underneath the glass. For Samsung, that's actually kind of a big deal because their Galaxy series has always had a home button of some sort. It's kind of a design, you know, it's part of their design language with these devices. So that would be a big difference.
I have some big questions about this. First of all, how do you hold a bezel-less phone without touching things and turning things on accidentally, you know, emailing someone you don't want to email just because you accidentally touched the edge of the screen? Mm-hmm. And where does all the stuff go? Like the earpiece, the proximity sensor, the front-facing camera, like there's a reason. I mean, where does all that stuff go? Where do you put it?
Yeah, and I think that's my big question here, too, is if it's all truly on all four corners, there's a lot of things that are going to have to be repositioned and figured out. And you know, maybe they have some new technology ways to do that. In the case of Xiaomi's Mi Mix, they literally had to move all that into the bottom, so they had to have that bezel down there. And then if you want to use the front-facing camera, of course, you turn it upside down, and then it puts it up top, and you're not taking a picture of your nostrils. So I don't know. I'll be curious to see how they pull that off. Sources are also saying that Samsung is going to be removing the headphone jack, which is actually kind of funny considering they were totally throwing shade during the Note 7 announcement at Apple. They said, quote, "You know what else it comes with? An audio jack. I'm just saying." So, I mean, if this is the trend, then okay, whatever. You know, I guess people will get over the fact that they said that one time and now they're doing something different. Developers who are interested in creating bots that run on Google Assistant, in this case by way of Google Home, can begin to build their own conversation actions right now. These new skills won't require a user to pre-install anything on the hardware to kick off the conversation. Once those conversational actions are actually pushed out, users would simply ask for the skill by name. For example, talk to personal chef about homemade cannoli, and that would kick off a conversation with the personal chef conversational agent, let's say, about cannoli. Of all things. These conversational actions will eventually also roll out to Pixel and Allo users as the platform progresses, because this is all part of kind of building out assistance capabilities. And right now, the vessel that it's being delivered through is Google Home.
Building conversations with bots is very difficult. I mean, yeah. It's, you know, it's the human.
I
mean, human conversation is, it's deceptively simple, I think. You know, I mean, just because we've been doing it for 40 years, it makes sense to us. But I mean, there's so many times where I'm just sitting in front of my Amazon Echo and asking a question a different way and then a different way. And I just get really frustrated. Certainly we don't have conversations. That's for sure.
I personally, and I have not lived with the Amazon Echo to compare it directly through my experience, I've been super like impressed with Google Home's ability to parse natural language and turn it into an action of some sort. And I've even played around with it where I'm requesting something that I request all the time, but using different words purposefully to see if it figures it out. And more often than not, it actually does. And I think that's where you need to get to for these types of appliances to be incredibly useful and for it to really prove to people why it's beneficial. If there's any sort of like groking around to try and find the correct syntax and everything, it takes all the fun out of it. It makes you not want to use it next time, because am I going to get into a 5-minute conversation with this thing trying to figure out how to speak its language? Like, you don't want that. And that's kind of at the core of what Conversation Actions is all about, really kind of, you know, using the power of Google and kind of the imagination of developers to figure out how that natural language, and there's a lot of partners here helping with this, but how that natural language can be kind of interpreted in ways that makes that app or that bot useful.
Yeah. So conversational actions for the Google Home is the same as Alexa skills.
Yeah.
Google's really setting up more of an expectation, I think, with a conversational action. I mean, just teaching Alexa a skill is very different. Like, do this. Okay. Where a conversational action, you know, we're talking about, you know, can you order me an Uber? Yes, I can. When do you want it? I want it at this time.
Right.
Like, you know, how is, we need your credit card, like a back and forth.
Yeah. It's like, exactly. A give and take.
Where I don't think Alexa's really promising that yet. And in the beginning with the Echo, you had to go into the app to enable a skill. Now some skills you have to enable, some you don't. It really, you know, I love it for weather. I love it for listening to the news. I love it for just basic questions, you know, a lot of cooking measurements. It's great for that. But, you know, there's a Twitter skill. It's essentially useless. Like, I can never remember what you're supposed to ask it. It's something about like read my tweets. And then, you know, it's like, what? Why would you want that?
Mm-hmm. Me and my children, we get into conversations with Google Home all the time, doing things like, I'm blanking on the name, but it's the Mad Libs.
Oh, yeah.
The Mad Libs, you know, and that kind of takes you down a certain path, and there's different ways that you can kind of maneuver through that. But, I feel like in my experience with Google Home, that's been one of the really kind of positive points about it, is that in some ways you are just kind of talking to someone, and it doesn't feel quite as robotic. You know, you can kind of talk the way you normally would, and many times it's going to get it right. There's a bunch of early access partners that are launching in the coming weeks, so I'm excited about that. Just a couple of name a few here: Quora, Lonely Planet, Genius, WebMD. So you can kind of envision, you know, like asking WebMD a question about, you know, I'm feeling a cold, what can I take, and it guiding you down a certain path. Media partners including BuzzFeed, NPR1, Wall Street Journal, and a whole lot more. So things around the corner. Also, purchases and bookings are apparently coming soon.
Well, automation replacing jobs is a common refrain on this show. And as we move more from an industrial age to an information age, the future of work for all of us is uncertain. We've talked about universal basic income, and that has that's the proposed plan to ensure that every member of society is guaranteed an income regardless of their employment status. Now, according to Quartz, a group of technologists, investors, and activists have vowed to spend $10 million over the next 2 years to come up with ideas of how universal basic income might work. So there's a lot of names you recognize in this group: Sam Altman from Y Combinator, Chris Hughes, co-founder of Facebook, a lot of others. And I think this is really necessary. I mean, it makes my brain hurt to think about how it would work exactly, but I really don't know how we're going to survive the future when so many jobs are being automated.
by people who are co-founding this thing. So basically they're saying, we're making technology to put you out of work, so let's figure out how we get you paid when our technology is reigns supreme. I don't know how I feel about that. But I mean,
well, I mean, that's the future. The, yeah, if they didn't do it, somebody would. I mean, that's the...
I suppose.
Did you not want to be in the industrial age? Like, you wish we were still in the agrarian age?
No, I don't wish that. But it's just kind of weird to be like, yeah, we're making all this stuff, and we got to figure out what you're going to do now. But Prince Edward Island... So that's a small Canadian province, unanimously decided yesterday on a resolution to create a UBI program for its citizens. So in many ways, this is kind of like a pilot UBI program. And I think a lot of places are going to be watching this to see how it goes down once they kind of get it all figured out and implemented and everything.
Yeah, I mean, I think that we will always work. People will always work. I think that's what's stayed with, you know, since the hunter-gatherer days. People, I think, gain a lot of enjoyment and self-worth from working, just necessarily getting paid for that work. Hasn't been around forever. And so I think that's something that could go away. I don't know how, but I'm glad that someone is putting money towards figuring it out.
Yeah, for sure. It seems kind of like what has to happen here. I didn't mean to call it out on, you know, as far as who are doing. I'm happy that they're doing it. It just feels a little funny when it's like, we've created all these things. We're going to put you out of work. Here's how we're going to figure out something for you. We'll figure it out. Don't worry. We got this. Magic Leap, the fantastical and super secretive mixed reality startup that earlier this year raised another $800 million from investors without any sort of publicly viewable product, has, according to former employees, been misleading in its portrayal of what the technology can actually do. Earlier this year, the company released the video called Just Another Day in the Office at Magic Leap. It's just one of many that we've seen, showcasing the technology. But in actuality, those sources say it was created by special effects companies, including those responsible for the films Mad Max Fury Road and The Hobbit. And so this broke very soon before we came to air. And so, you know, it was a really long piece. I wasn't able to read the entire thing, but what I read was kind of fascinating, just in the sense, you know, of the people that are involved here, right? Like, so if this was created and facilitated through a special effects company, you know, that made those movies. We also heard earlier this year that Peter Jackson serves on the advisory panel of Magic Leap. And actually, Jackson had said, in 10 years, I expect that mixed reality technology like Magic Leap will be used as much as, if not more, than smartphones. They have a deal with Lucasfilm for a joint research lab in SF. It seems like all these lines are crossing, and suddenly it just feels like you've been taken a little bit, that like maybe this is some grand marketing experiment for some movie that's about to come out, you know?
Yeah, maybe.
I don't actually think that, but it's 2016. Anything's possible.
Anything is. I mean, this could be a simulation. We know that.
Yeah.
I think there's been a lot of journalists that I really respect that have seen these demos and they've said it's amazing. So that's what was so surprising to me about this information article, because the information demo, they said that it was bulky. It was like a helmet-like device connected by several cables to a desktop computer about 6 feet away. Images were jittery and blurry. And, you know, Abovitz, who's the CEO and founder of Magic Leap, he's always been like a little cuckoo. You know, they're in Florida. They're away from Silicon Valley. And a lot of people have said that that's what's amazing about it, that they're creating this technology outside of this bubble that we're all in. But, you know, so there's some things that he says that he said to the information reporter. Just he answered questions referencing squirrels and sea monkeys. So I don't know. I've always hoped that Magic Leap was real and that this kind of augmented reality was going to be a real reality.
Yeah.
But I don't know. This does not look good.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of a bummer reading through this because I had high hopes for it too. Maybe we'll still actually see that. But I mean, some of these things are really going counter to what we've expected, especially after the amount of money that's just been invested and poured into this thing. That video, by the way, the video kind of game that you saw, Just Another Day in the Office at Magic Leap, if you read in the text below the video, it said something to the tune of, this is a game that we're playing around in the office right now. But according to these sources, that game didn't even actually exist when they released that video. So, you know, take that for what it's worth, I suppose. It's just kind of a bummer to feel like your illusion has been shattered a little bit. And maybe it's, I don't know, they've promised a lot. So you have to imagine many people were like, yeah, I'll believe it when I see it. Mm-hmm. Apparently that's where we're at right now.
Well, after the break, why we might not be ready to watch Westworld with VR goggles strapped to our face. But first, let's take a minute to thank Tracker, the sponsor of this episode. It's that time of year. Don't lose your luggage or your valuable gifts this season. Tracker can help you make losing things a thing of the past, and I'll help tell you how to get one for free. The Tracker Bravo locates misplaced keys, can help you find your wallet, your luggage, instruments. I have one on my kids' band, trumpets, because those often get left behind. It can help you find bicycles, electronic devices, even pets in just seconds. The coin-sized device is constructed with anodized aluminum for the thinnest, most durable tracking. You can easily attach it to your items via the key loop or an adhesive. Tracker is enabled by Bluetooth LE, so the battery will last you up to 1 year. You can add a laser engraved message to each Tracker Bravo, like return or pet info, and you can now even personalize your tracker with a custom printed image. You can help loved ones keep track of their new gadgets. Trackers makes great stocking stuffers. Pair Tracker to your iOS or your Android device and find its precise location with the tap of a button. It's that easy. Your phone can now track up to 10 devices at once. So if you lose a lot of different things, don't worry. Just get a bunch of trackers, stick them everywhere. You can customize two-way separation alerts so you're notified before you leave your item behind. Then if you lose your phone, you can press the button on the tracker and your phone will ring even if it's on silent. There are over 3.5 million devices shipped. That means that Tracker has the largest crowd GPS network in the world. So your lost item will show up on a map, even if it's miles away. If you lose your item, the Tracker app records its last known location on a map. Then when another Tracker user comes within 100-foot range of your item, you'll receive a GPS update of where your item is located. So go to thetracker.com and never lose your possessions again. Plus, just for you, just for our audience, if you enter promo code TNT, you'll get a free Tracker Bravo with your order. That's thetracker.com, promo code TNT to get your free Tracker Bravo today. So I think it was Mark Twain who said, just because you can watch Westworld inside a VR headset doesn't mean that you should.
Yep.
I think it was Mark Twain.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Joining us to talk about his experience with HBO and Google's Daydream View is Russell Hawley from VR Heads. Welcome back to the show, Russell.
Thanks.
So what did you think of HBO's VR app?
I'm not a fan. I'm not a fan for a couple of reasons. It's really just not very well put together when compared to just a lot of the other VR apps that are out there that do very similar things, like Hulu and Netflix and a lot of these other Google Play movies that is now available for Daydream. It's really just not well assembled. It forces you to remove the headset in order to log in. And anyone who's ever used HBO's app knows that you have to do that once a month. Regardless of, you know, which service you use, because HBO bumps you out once a month and makes you log back in. But you don't know that you have to log back in until you've picked a video to watch. So you go through all the menus and you pick a video to watch, and then it tells you that you have to take the headset off so that you can log in, which just isn't done on any of the, you know, competing products. It's really just kind of frustrating.
I think the craziest thing is they have you like sitting in a room in VR and you're in the second row. Like if VR is going to do anything for us, like I want to be in the front row.
It is visually a little odd that you're not in the front row, and also kind of unusual when compared to some of the other competing apps. But there's an argument to be made there for it adding depth, which is an important part of watching video in VR. If you're watching, you know, kind of a flat video, it's important to create artificial depth so that there's not eye strain, so that your eye feels like it's focusing further out than it normally would. So while that is kind of weird, it's not without purpose.
Yeah, I'm trying to think actually, because I've seen video environments like this on the Gear VR before. When you watch a video, you can place yourself in the middle of a movie theater, and it's never in the front row. It's always in the middle. That's probably just also to just kind of give you a sense of this space that you're used to being at. And so that kind of makes sense to me. One question I have about this is, in my time with Daydream VR and my Pixel phone, heating is a regular occurrence, a regular issue with a lot, you know, the games that you play. Do you get that when you're, I mean, especially considering the fact that you might be watching something for like 2+ hours?
So I don't get that any more than I got it with Samsung phones in the Gear VR. Okay. The ironic exception being the Note 7.
Of course.
But yeah, so, you know, every phone gets warm when you put it in VR. And the way that Daydream is designed, you've got this band that's right up against your forehead. So the heat kind of, you know, draws that straight line into your forehead. And that's not particularly comfortable if you're, you know, playing for extended periods of time and there's not a lot of airflow, you know, wherever you are. But it's not something that I've said that I've found to be any more or less frustrating than you know, Gear VR usage, including, you know, watching videos for extended periods of time.
Yeah. Now, do they have any unique VR content, or is it really just the shows on HBO?
No. So for right now, this is the tablet view of HBO's app with no VR-friendly interfaces or anything like that. It is straight up the tablet app just kind of hung out in front of you. You know, with the menu bar off to the side, and you kind of swipe with the Daydream trackpad to navigate. You don't use the pointer part of Daydream to do anything other than select files. And all of this is weirdly just separate from some of the great experiences that exist in, you know, Netflix and Hulu and Google Play Movies that are all doing the exact same thing.
Hmm. And so you recommend all of those apps for Daydream, the Netflix?
I think Netflix isn't out yet. It's going to be out later this year. But I think my favorite so far has been Hulu, just for the sheer attention to detail, right down to very silly things. There are four wooden blocks on the table in front of you that you can kind of pick up and toss if you find yourself, you know, in need of a distraction during a commercial or something, which I just thought was really kind of silly. But there is a practical use to having all of these weird things in front of the table to kind of add immersion. All of the you know, the light, you know, kind of the colors that are playing off of this virtual screen in front of you actually get reflected off of the things on that table to create the immersion that you're actually sitting in a dark room.
Right. And it's not just a static screen that isn't actually interplaying with the environment that surrounds you at all. One question that I have is, obviously, VR is about immersion. And it's about, you know, three-dimensional environments and all that kind of stuff. And then we have, you know, motion pictures that are released in the 3D versions and stuff like that. Is there any plan or any sort of solution for watching those 3D versions of, like, major motion pictures in VR? Does HBO have any plans to do that? And if not, you know, anyone else?
We haven't seen any official plans from anyone yet, but I genuinely hope that that happens. And there are kind of cobbled together solutions. If you can, you know, get your own video file of a 3D movie, there are standalone video players for the Gear VR that you can load it into and get that kind of three-dimensional effect while you're watching. And that is very cool. But yeah, I you know, really think that if someone could put together you know, streaming that 3D effect into a headset, it would be really good.
Mm-hmm.
So you also have a piece on VR heads about all of the apps available in Daydream. What are some of the apps that you really like?
There have been a couple of really great ones that have come out over the last couple of days. My two favorites right now are the new Gunjack 2, which is a sequel to a game that was incredibly popular on the Gear VR when it very first came out and has continued to grow. I think it's one of the most popular games on all the VR platforms right now. So the sequel to that, which is a lot of fun in Daydream, but also the new Need for Speed No Limits, which comes out on the 14th, where you're actually steering with the Daydream controller, which is not quite as intuitive as it feels because it's not a steering wheel. But sitting, you know, in the driver's seat of the car while you're going through kind of the traditional Need for Speed style racing is a lot of fun.
Well, Russell, thank you so much for coming on. Russell Hawley is the editor at VR Heads, which is VRheads.com. He's the managing editor, and he's at Russell Hawley on Twitter. Thanks for coming on.
It's been a pleasure.
Thanks, Russell. We'll talk to you soon. All right, so we got some feedback. Trent Moody, fan of the show, we've heard from Trenton a few times now, sent us this video about his Google Home going off at random times, apparently. This is kind of weird. I was trying to figure it out. Let's take a look. We'll need audio on this one for sure.
It scratches. Why can't there be a paper just for me?
Yeah, it's kind of quiet. It's pretty quiet audio.
It scratches. Why can't there be a paper just for me? Well, now there is. Paper.
Paper for women, apparently, is a phrase that will wake up your Google Home.
Paper for women.
Paper for women.
If anyone's Google Home right now is waking up when we say paper for women, let us know.
Paper for women. Paper for women. I don't know. There must be something with the cadence, and I don't know. I'm very curious to hear from people to see if we just woke up your Google Home. Yes.
Well, my Amazon Echo's wake word is echo, and sometimes it goes off when I cough because it's like,
Oh, you said echo.
Yeah.
Up next, the Spotify and SoundCloud relationship hit a speed bump, or maybe worse. But first, let's take a minute to thank LinkedIn Learning and Lynda.com, the sponsor of this episode. LinkedIn acquired Lynda.com to bring you LinkedIn Learning. It's personalized, expert-led, on-demand e-learning from LinkedIn. LinkedIn Learning is now offering a free course. It's Managing Technical Projects. It's led by project management expert Bob McGannon. Technical projects have a unique set of needs and challenges. New technology has to be researched. Downtime must be kept to a minimum. The organization must be helped to adapt to all that change. In this course, McGannon discusses specific approaches to mitigate the risks and challenges common with technology projects. He presents specific challenges for you to explore, including possible conflicts with stakeholders and vendors. McGannon also reviews case studies to bring concepts to life. Compare your solutions with McGannon's recommendations, and you'll see how your management, your project management skills compare. Don't miss this awesome course and the more than 9,000 courses currently available at LinkedIn Learning. Team solutions are available for as low as $2,000 per year. LinkedIn Learning will identify the precise skills your organization needs to achieve set goals and will create personalized recommendations using LinkedIn Network Intelligence. Their library offers a wide range of business, creative, and technology courses taught by world-class industry experts. So you can learn anytime, anywhere, on any device, online and offline. Their bite-sized videos provide immediate problem solving and are the perfect way to help team members close a skills gap without interrupting your latest project. So get your free Managing Technical Projects course and request a demo for your organization today by visiting learning.linkedin.com/twit. That's learning.linkedin.com/twit. We thank LinkedIn Learning for their support of Tech News Today. Spotify and SoundCloud had been sitting in a tree together for much of this year, at least we thought so. But sources say things have changed in that relationship. Joining us to talk about this dissolving romance is Alex Wilhelm from Mattermark. How's it going, Alex?
Well, now that we're talking about dissolving romance, my dating life's going to come into play. So I feel very, very prepared for this segment. Thank you.
Whoa. This is more information than I was prepared for.
Actually, I had no idea what the intro was, and I felt the need to make a joke. So
I want to see where this one goes. So what exactly are the birdies saying about a potential Spotify acquisition of SoundCloud?
The answer is no, which is kind of an odd thing. I feel like SoundCloud has been in play a number of times with different firms, and it can't quite seem to find a home. And I was looking through its past numbers before, and I just don't think it makes that much money in terms of revenue, and it loses quite a lot of money in terms of losses. So it's a very, very complicated business in a very competitive space, and it's a small, more niche player. So perhaps it isn't really that shocking that it hasn't found a home yet, but I think there's kind of a general consensus that it can't really operate on its own long term because it just loses too much. So I'm almost curious if we in technology have built something that is almost unsustainable, yet still kind of cool. And we don't see that too often.
Yeah, I mean, that's the big challenge here because there are, I mean, SoundCloud has a rabid fan base, people who love it ardently. Yes. And then when you combine that with but can't make any money, I mean, you know, what company is going to actually do this? You actually mentioned in your piece that Spotify had twice backed away from an acquisition. And then we also know that Twitter had backed away. So, I mean, is its toxicity just the fact that it's not making any money, or is there something deeper than that, do you think?
There's something deeper than that. You nail it, but also it's very expensive. So if SoundCloud only costs $5, it could find an acquirer. But when Twitter put the last round of money in, I think it was around a $700 million valuation. So if you're going to buy it, you're not only buying a money-losing cash flow, but you're also having to expend that much money in cash and stock, presuming they'll sell it for just kind of a flat exit. That's maybe not the case. They may want $1 billion for it. So now you're $1 billion down and you have new employees and expenses and you're losing more money, all for a product that may not be that compelling to your user base. So Rabidity and how niche it is really cool for us. I mean, I love SoundCloud. I use it pretty much every day, but I don't give them any money. And so I think the price tag combined with the losses is kind of a poisonous duo. It's not going to let it exit privately anywhere near its last valuation.
Well, do you think there's room for anyone else besides Apple Music and Google Play and Spotify? I mean, you know, yesterday Pandora announced their paid streaming service that was going to be different than the standard Pandora. I guess this one's called Pandora Pro or
Pandora yeah. Premium or whatever. Yeah.
So, and a lot of people said, like, you know, it's too late for them even. I mean, do you think there's room here but beyond the big three?
Yeah, everyone's trying. I mean, Microsoft has Groove. Amazon has a service tied to both Alexa and Prime. We're seeing every single major player have an effort here. I mean, Google actually had two for a while. They had Google Play Music, and they also had YouTube Red, which were actually in some way competing products inside the same corporation, actually inside the same subsidiary at the same corporation, which is just hilarious. So I think everyone's making a go at this. I think everyone thinks they need to have a compelling, user-friendly music platform, and that may not be the case, but it's certainly kind of an example of what we've seen across platform companies like Google and Microsoft and, you know, Amazon and Facebook, really, that they compete everywhere. They make phones, they make music services, they make operating systems. I mean, these mega corporations are essentially conglomerates now. And so it's weird that we're seeing this spill over into something as niche as streaming music, which is a money-losing, you know, proposition for nearly everyone. But here we are with all the major companies fighting and then SoundCloud trying to find a seat at the table when it's already the smallest player. I'm kind of curious if back in 2014, when Twitter, I think, initially decided to not buy SoundCloud, if back then it could have sold for a reasonable price and found a real home. But certainly now it's kind of the odd man out.
Yeah, they've spent a couple of years not necessarily progressing. They've also launched their own subscription service, which, I mean,
yes.
That fell on deaf ears, no pun intended. Obviously, there's compelling functionality behind the service of SoundCloud. That's why a lot of people actually, it has a pretty large user base. I can't remember the number. Was it 400 million, somewhere around that mark?
It's huge.
So they've got a rabid fan base. Like I said, I'm sure some of those people who are fans of the service are probably actually pretty happy to see that Spotify isn't buying it because they don't want it to change at all. But you take that functionality and all these streaming services, is this functionality, is this kind of focus that SoundCloud does easily kind of replicable with these other services? And maybe that's another reason to pass.
Well, I think it's an interesting point. I was talking to a friend of mine who's active in the indie music scene, and he despises Spotify because there's no way to kind of opt in if you're an independent artist. There's no upload button, he says. Whereas on SoundCloud and services like YouTube, you can just take part in the platform if you want to. You don't need to sign a large contract or whatever it is. But with Spotify, it's much more of a walled garden. And so effectively, the largest music streaming service that remains independent, at least for now, is exclusionary. And that may be tied to its, you know, relationships with larger labels, their investors, and so forth. But I mean, at least for now, you can't really build SoundCloud given normal paradigms for how Spotify runs at Spotify. So I don't see a way to rebuild it. And so by not buying it, they're almost saying no to that user base in that context. And so they're saying effectively niche indie music is not, you know, profitable enough to really pay attention to, or alternatively, it's too expensive to buy to then take advantage of. Either way, it's bad for SoundCloud. I mean, the sad thing about this story is no matter what angle you pick or what, you know, perspective, it doesn't look good for the smaller company. When you lose more than $20 million a year, you just don't have that many options if you're that small.
Mm-hmm. Maybe Facebook should buy them just to be nice.
Well, maybe Facebook should buy SpaceX and then send SoundCloud to Mars, now the very first Martian streaming service. I mean, you can conjure up any solution you want, but yes, who really cares? not towards you, Megan. Sorry, I just mean like, in general. I mean, it's $1 billion, right? Just imagine $1 billion check, and you can go out there and spend it anywhere you want. Do you buy 15% of Slack, or do you buy 100% of SoundCloud? Mm-hmm. I think you know where you put the money. Mm-hmm. So I think they're kind of stuck there. And there are going to be other, you know, examples of unicorns like this company or unicorn-ish companies that are going to have to eat a lot of crow. And I think investors are to blame so much as founders are. But, you know, we'll see a big shakeout in 17. And this is just kind of a preamble for a reckoning that's been a long time coming.
Yeah, potentially so. And, I mean, we hardly even mentioned, if at all, you know, just the kind of ongoing expectation that Spotify is going to IPO in possibly 2017. There's the idea that, you know, some sort of acquisition of SoundCloud at this point might actually be a distraction, you know, in the way of, you know, having to deal with all those rights and everything, licensing more than anything leading into that. So that could be another issue.
I was talking to one of my favorite sources in the IPO community, for lack of a better term, and we were discussing Spotify's position. And essentially, they've been trying to go out for 3 years and haven't been able to. And if you look at their 2015 result, they spent 85% of their revenue paying record labels. Now, I don't know how much of that money went to actual artists, but when 85% of your revenue is immediately just gone, wow. You don't have that much left over for staff, advertising, you know, acquisitions.
Ping pong tables.
And so I wonder ping pong tables, you know, beer kegs that are upside down, you know, the whole Silicon Valley thing. But I'm curious if they just don't actually have enough cash laying around to make the SoundCloud deal even possible. And if they had to use stock, it'd be even more expensive, of course.
Yeah.
So the Spotify financial situation is going to be a test for the industry. And it doesn't look that great in the short term, but I will say I'm a huge fan. I use Spotify like 10 hours a day. So I really hope they do well, because it would really wreck my life if they didn't.
Yeah, absolutely. Alex Wilhelm, it's always such a pleasure getting on the show. Thanks for sticking around work a little bit later to do the show with us today. Appreciate it.
Always a pleasure.
Mattermark.com and at Alex on Twitter. Thanks again.
Yes, and I shaved. Just
oh, thank you. Okay. We really appreciate it.
All right.
Have a good night, man. See ya.
TNT's fan of the day is Diogo Constantino, who sent us this screenshot on Twitter saying, how I watch TNT with my Podbird podcatcher on my Meizu MX5 Pro Ubuntu edition every morning on my commute.
Wow, that is nerdy. I love it. I love the detail on that one. We got all the insight on that one.
It also appears that English might not be his first language. So,
reproducao.
So, I
not
know,
my first language. That's for sure.
Yeah, I know some people who English is their first language have trouble understanding me. So, I really appreciate you doing this.
Yeah,
keeping with us. Show us how you watch or listen to TNT. Just record a video or take a picture of yourself or your setup. Post it on Instagram. We like videos. Post it on Google+, Twitter, Facebook. Use the hashtag #HowIWatchTNT, and we will find it. After the break, we remember astronaut John Glenn with gifts. But first, let's take a minute to thank Blue Apron, the sponsor of this episode. Blue Apron is the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. Their mission is to make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone, while at the same time supporting a more sustainable food system, setting the highest standards for ingredients, and building a community of home chefs. Blue Apron delivers seasonal recipes with fresh, high-quality ingredients so you can make delicious home-cooked meals. Each meal comes with a step-by-step, easy-to-follow recipe card, also pre-portioned ingredients that can be prepared in a wonderful meal. It only takes you 40 minutes or less. You can save time and money. Shopping at the grocery store is 60% more expensive than Blue Apron. Maybe you spend a lot of time eating out, or you shop at really high-end grocery chains, and you're just going to be spending a lot of money. You can now spend under $10 per person for healthy home-cooked meals. Customize your recipes every week based on your dietary preferences and choose a delivery option that fits your need. There's no weekly commitment, so you only get deliveries when you want them. You will not have your refrigerator overfilled when you go out of town. Blue Apron delivers to 99% of the continental U.S. Blue Apron also sets the highest quality standards for their community of over 150 local farms, fisheries, and ranchers across the U.S. Now, Blue Apron not only supports a more sustainable food system, but it also supports happy and healthy families, because cooking together builds strong family bonds. And research shows that Blue Apron families cook nearly 3 times more often. It's getting towards the holidays, which means many things, one of which is you have to buy gifts for a lot of people. And you don't want just stuff. Nobody needs more stuff. But everybody has to eat. And some people don't. Like, maybe you are the type of person that loves going to the grocery store and you love coming up with your own menus. But you probably know someone in your life who might appreciate a Blue Apron box or two. So think of it that way. Roasted pork and braised cabbage. That's on the menu, with barley and glazed apples. Thai green coconut curry with sweet potato and jasmine rice. Also on one of their menus. Brown butter and chestnut gnocchi with Brussels sprouts and pea shoot salad. You might also get that 1 week. Check out this week's menu and get your first 3 meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/twit. You want to get the free shipping and you want to get the first 3 meals free, so you have to add twit at the end. That's blueapron.com/twit. And we thank Blue Apron for their support of Tech News Today. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. Today, John Glenn, the first American to orbit the Earth, died at the age of 95. If you're having trouble expressing your feelings about this, I might have a solution for you. Space GIFs. Engadget reports that NASA has its own Giphy page with over 400 animated photographs of Saturn's rings, black holes, and weird stuff they do on the International Space Station. You can now also follow NASA on Pinterest. That has a John Glenn tag, so I'm assuming it's John Glenn. I did not confirm that, but
yeah. I believe that it is. It definitely looks like it is. How about while you show a few of these, I read a couple of John Glenn's quotes, because he's very quotable and he's got some really great quotes. So here are three of my favorites that I was finding.
Okay.
One of them is, "There is still no cure for the common birthday." That is true. That's so true. As you get older, you'll understand what that means. Another one is, and this was during the Reagan administration. I thought this was hilarious. He said, "Any administration foolish enough to call ketchup a vegetable cannot be expected to cut the mustard." Mm-hmm. Very good. And this is my favorite. "As I hurtled through space, one thought kept crossing my mind. Every part of this rocket was supplied by the lowest bidder." Oof. That's got to be a harsh realization to make when you're hurtling through space.
I know no better way to express my feelings than through GIFs, except for sometimes GIFs also work too.
Yeah, I noticed that you, I don't know. What do you normally say? I can't remember. Is it just flip? Are you a flip-flopper? Mm-hmm. A GIF GIF flip-flopper?
Yeah,
because I am too.
Yeah, I am.
Mm-hmm. Cool. We're one and the same. But when paired with John Glenn, mm-hmm. then it must be GIF. Mm-hmm. Today, if any other day it's not GIF, today it is, in memory of John Glenn. Very brilliant man. TNT records live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 11 p.m. UTC at twit.tv/live. You can be part of the show by emailing us, tnt@twit.tv. Leave us a short voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW, and find us on Twitter. We're at Tech News Today TV.
You can show your allegiance to Twit with our new Twit Army gear. These shirts and hoodies are designed by the Twit staff. They come in a variety of beautiful, attractive colors.
What?
Yeah, I know, they are. If you order before December 15th, the shirts will arrive before Christmas. All you have to do is go to teespring.com/twit, order yours today. T-shirt, sweatshirt, whatever, long sleeve, short sleeve, all the sleeves.
No.
Nope. And you can also find all the ways to subscribe to our show at twit.tv/TNT. And if you want to tweet at me that I said GIF wrong, I'm at Megan Maroney on Twitter.
And I'm at Jason Howell. Thanks to our technical director, Kara Cole. Thanks to Alex for helping out and scrolling words on the screen today. Thanks to Kevin for editing. And thanks to you for talking tech with us today. We'll see you again tomorrow. Bye, everyone.